I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We explore the cultural and physical development of life in the modern city through the lens of history and the context of community. Today's show, The Jazz Fest, brought to you by Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates. It's that time of year again when music lovers and cultural tourists pour into the Big Easy the last weekend of April and the first weekend of May for food, melody, and memory making. The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, or Jazz Fest, as it's affectionately known by fans all over the globe, started in 1970, growing from a modest group of 350 to more than 600,000 annual attendees. However, the historical significance of the Jazz Fest dates much further back than even the dawn of New Orleans jazz in the early 1900s, back to the 1700s, when an integrated world danced in the public squares of the Treme, sweet summer sweat permeated only by the rhythm of African drums and Caribbean beats. The first Jazz Fest included musical acts in a singular gospel tent on Congo Square. That inaugural event must have been quite a show, with artists like the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, Duke Ellington, Mahalia Jackson, Pete Fountain, Al Hurt, Clifton Chenier, Fats Domino, and the Meters taking the stage to perform. Today, the festival has expanded genres to include an incredible variety showcasing blues, R&B, gospel, Cajun, Zydeco, Afro-Caribbean, folk music, Latin, rock, rap, country, bluegrass, and of course, both contemporary and traditional jazz. Oh, and then of course, there's the food. Let's not forget about that. Muffaladas, red beans and rice, and crawfish monica, beignets, alligator sausage po' boys, soft shell crabs, jambalaya, crawfish pie, and filet gumbo. My guests today are the leader of the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, Roger Lewis, and radio show host, musician, and educator, our friend, Dr. Gordon Burnick. For the listeners of Sidewalk Radio, can we tell folks who you are and what you do?
My name is Gordon Vernick, and I teach full-time at Georgia State University. So my position here is a coordinator of jazz studies. So I run the program. We have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, so I coordinate the entire program. I'm also a jazz educator. That's really what I am. I teach kids how to play jazz. And I'm also a professional musician. So I have my own group and my own musical projects that I have to... You know, I have to. It's like I have a stove, and I have all these different burners going, and I have to watch each pot. I can't let it boil. I got to, you know, be very careful. So my career is a balancing act. And then I do my radio shows, that's how you know me, is from Jazz Insight. In a nutshell, I do a lot of things, but number one, I'm a jazz educator, and then I'm also a performer.
Today's episode of Sidewalk Radio is about the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, and I'd love to know how New Orleans became the birthplace of jazz.
I mean, you can look at the Mississippi Delta as kind of the birthplace of the sound of the blues, and the sound of the blues is the cornerstone of American music. And of course, there's a very strong relationship between New Orleans, Cuba, and Puerto Rico, and the island of Saint Domingue, which now is Haiti and the Dominican Republic. I mean, there's a very, very, if you again peel back the layers, there's a very close relationship between the music of the slaves and the freed black people that were living there, and the exchange back and forth, the trade exchange, and of course the music was part of that. You can't separate the two things.
Right.
So it makes sense, and of course New Orleans being an important port city, but all the cities around that crescent area, whether it's Mobile, to Pensacola, down through Florida and through the Texas, you know, that area in southern Texas. So that whole area, Mississippi, in Alabama, that's really the birthplace where it really percolates. It's such an incredibly complicated history, and it's got so much culture, and it's for generations. It was kind of an insulated city. It was probably the most European city that we have in North America. I look at jazz as if we have a big tree. American music is a big tree. We have a root system which has work songs, blues, European music, all kinds of different instruments, and then we have this root system moving up into a trunk, and then of course we have branches, and the branches are the different styles, and of course the older branches are lower to the ground. They're bigger and they're older, And then we have the new growth that's coming up to the top of the tree. And, you know, there's the brass band tradition goes back out to the, you know, Civil War, to the popularity of military bands, and, of course, the appearance of valved brass instruments, because before the 1830s, we just basically had bugles. And then once they figured out how to make a chromatic instrument and apply it to military bands, I mean, it just became immensely popular. So that's been around for a long time, and the bands in New Orleans were incredibly popular, and then there was also the appearance of the fraternal organizations, sometimes referred to as secret societies, and the members would protect each other, and marching bands were a very, very important part of that existence, and if there was a party or something, someone passed away, one of the members passed away, the brass bands would play. There were hundreds of these groups, and so the whole society was honeycombed with all these organizations, and each one had a band, and because of the popularity of the brass instruments, it was the logical way to go. But there was many other kinds of music in New Orleans. You had string instruments, you had what they call salon groups that featured guitars and violins. Violins were hugely popular up through probably about the 1930s, and they really started to lose their popularity in popular music. But if you look at pictures of those early bands, you'll see violin players and guitar players and string bass players. It wasn't only the brass instruments, but because of marching and performing outside, that was part of the reason that they were so prevalent, is because they're highly mobile and the sound really projects.
With the diversity in jazz and offshoots, is it not so surprising that there are so many different types of music that are at the jazz festival, or is that just kind of a product of what people want to hear today and we keep the name as legacy?
Jazz is a complex issue. It's not so much a what, it's a how you play. Now every few years or so, there's a new branch on the tree. There's a new way to play jazz. Like, you could look at New Orleans style versus Chicago. It's different. Big band versus bebop versus what they call modal jazz or hard bop or cool jazz or all these different, you know, names that we put on the music. There was a different formula. So it becomes really complicated because jazz means different things to different people. Some people really don't like the guys who like swing didn't like bebop. I would say, well, that's not jazz. Of course it's jazz, because the only constant thing in jazz is change. So how can you quantify or even define something if the one commonality is change? I can appreciate all kinds. And if you're going to have a festival, you have to have all those branches on the tree there.
We're on the line with Roger Lewis of the Dirty Dozen Brass Band.
Hello.
Roger.
That's me.
Gene Kansas with Sidewalk Radio. How you doing?
How you doing, buddy?
I was born in 1973. Y'all came around in 1977. The band was formed, and it's just, you know, so much has changed. In my lifetime, this reassuring constant, it's been the food, it's definitely been the music, and it's been the spirit of the city. But it's a different city, you know? And I'd love to hear about your personal history with New Orleans.
Well, I was born in 1941. I have seen a whole lot of stuff go down, right? I started playing music at the age of, at the age of 8 years old. Tennessee started on saxophone at the age of 10.
When did you get into the Dirty Dozen Brass Band? And share a little bit about the history of the band with our listeners?
So much to say about that, my involvement with the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, because I was a member of the Fast Domino Band. I remember coming off the road after living in California, and I met a guy by the name of Darryl Adams. He had a band called the Tornado Brass Band. And I was hanging out one night, and he asked me that I want to, "Man, you want to do a second line tomorrow?" I said, "Well, yeah, I ain't doing nothing so." That was my first introduction, not necessarily with brass band per se, but that particular chapter that led into Dirty Dozen. And then I decided to go back to school and take some music courses at Southern University under the direction of Edward Kidd Jordan, Dr. Edward Kidd Jordan, so I should say. I met Charles Joseph. Charles and I was taking classes at Southern University, and we always would be playing in the original Sixth Ward Dirty Dozen, which was Benny Jones' band. But we just would, you know, show up for the gig and make the gig. So I said, "Man," one day him and I was talking, I said, "Man, we always playing together." I said, "Why don't we try to get together and try to organize the band and get something happening?" When we started playing the music, I was studying bebop. I said, "Man, let's fix Thelonious Monk." So we brought that to the street. People loved it. Then we started playing Michael Jackson. I think Kevin Harris was into the Michael Jackson thing. And I mean, everything we could think about, all the stuff that you always wanted to play that you didn't have the opportunity to play in other bands. You got your own band, you can do whatever else. So we just started mixing all this different kind of music. Music of John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, avant-garde type music, and everything you could think of to do with the music. And we brought the music to the streets.
Do you think that playing the music of the popular culture helped to make y'all popular?
Yeah, well, because we came out with something totally different from what was going on at the time. Most of the brass band was just playing traditional music. I always used to say, if you're going to come listen to Dirty Dozen, come to Dirty Dozen, where Dirty Dozen playing the second line, you better bring your jogging suit and your tennis, because you're going to get a good workout. And people was dancing to that music, man. I mean, you know, but we wasn't really trying to change the history of New Orleans music. We just were trying to play the music that we loved to play. And it made for a difference because it caught the ear of a very famous producer, organizer, which is George Wein, who organized all these jazz festivals all over the world.
For the people who may not know, he really was the original organizer of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, and Quint Davis at the time was the intern, and he now really took it to a whole nother level.
George Wein is responsible for most of all the jazz festivals, the Nice Festival, all these festivals all over the world. You know, and he's an excellent musician. He's a musician also. He's a great pianist, you know, and a hell of a nice guy.
When you go to the Jazz Fest and you're going to listen to music, there's so much more than just the music. There's also the food. I want to know what you enjoy eating. I think people want to know, you know, what some of their favorite musicians like to go do.
For me, I like the white beans. I love white beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got a little stand right by the jazz tent that serves the best white beans in the world, man. I love them white beans with a turkey neck, a smothered turkey neck. Oh, my God. We got the best music, the best food, and we got the best people. We only want that 1% of give the city a bad rep.
Tell people what they're going to get that first weekend of May when they come out and see y'all.
First of all, they're going to have a good time. They're going to hear some real people music. And, you know, it's going to be high energy. It's going to be music for your body, mind, and your soul. That's what it's going to be. We cover all three bases.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Roger Lewis and Gordon Vernick. To our sponsors, Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates, go our deepest gratitude. And, of course, we'd also like to thank you, our faithful fans, for all you do. We love you. Have a great Jazz Fest, and we'll see you next month. Laissez la bon temps rouler.